Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. It is the 14th of November and it's finally cold here. Thank goodness. We have a little tiny bit of snow. So, I mean, like, we don't usually have snow in November, but
right.
It's usually not like 70 degrees. So, that's a relief.
Well, it's cold outside. Now, which is,
it's gonna be, yeah. Hopefully it's gonna be cold now until.
Can we close the garage?
No, because we have a cat living in there, and I'm afraid of it.
I know, but we it's cold, and we have stuff in there that doesn't need to get exposed to weather, like expensive saws, and a freezer like that's full of meat that someone could just walk by and take all of the meat.
I know. Well, I don't think gifted. You should say online that we're. Don't say gifted. I don't think you should say on the internet that we have a freezer
full. So are you sure the cat's still... Why do we...
Well, I don't know.
It's ridiculous to have the garage gaping open because you saw one cat walk in there like once.
No. I've seen it. Like, it's made its home there.
I don't see it. Do you see a nest? What are you looking...
Cats don't have nests.
Whatever they... I thought it was having babies.
Well, it looked chubby.
Okay, but I'm sure it's an outdoor cat, so I'm sure it has like... Other places it can go.
Well, we need to make sure. Like, I don't want it to be stuck in there. So. Well,
I don't want to be stuck either, but.
We are going to have to do something. I mean, I sort of agree that we can't just leave the garage open for the entire winter, but it needs to have a way to get in and out if that's where it lives. We can't be that kind of people that just shut people
out of the
people out of our lives. I'm not going to have
what? Okay, so if we
keep
that.
Sharing is caring.
If we woodland, this is a woodland. If we put like cinder blocks to keep the cat door open,
yeah, that's fine.
So it can come in and out. No, it's not fine because when the cat decides to leave the garage and we don't know about it, guess who's going to come in?
I mean, I'm sure we already
have rats and like raccoons and like. No, I don't want. It's cold
I don't
in the
know.
Winter.
Do you think that this
so
is like,
be wanting
is this
to come
what
in?
We were going to talk about
no,
today?
No, we're going to talk about it.
Well, we didn't have anything, so this is perfect.
We did kind of have something.
What was on your mind today?
Oh, you said you wanted to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I do. I incidentally realized that I can't blog on Sunday mornings because, speaking of cats, the cat comes and sort of sleeps on my head and the time when I would normally blog, and so I can't, in my world, you can't move a cat for any reason, so that's why I haven't been blogging on Sunday mornings, in case anybody was wondering, which I would imagine nobody is, but...
Your Sunday morning blogs are like the best blogs, but yeah, so no, did you not do one yesterday?
No, I didn't blog yesterday, because I had a cat, so I couldn't blog. Also, I had a draft, and it was pretty bad, so I just trashed it. It was about the readings. I can't remember what I was going to say, though, about them. Yeah, it wasn't very good if I can't even remember. But I did want to talk. Like, I have been watching on a loop that guy that won the New Hampshire, like a local, not a big pageant, I would imagine, but like... I guess all the pageant season is going on now. All the local smaller pageants are going, and they lead up to the big. Eventually, you get a Miss America,
right?
You know, but so it was like a smaller. I don't know if it was
more local
for
pageant.
Miss. It wasn't for Miss New Hampshire. It was for a county in New Hampshire,
yeah.
And I've been it's only like a not even 4 minutes. Like a minute long clip. Of the guy being announced as the winner, and then he falls to his knees and
he's
massive.
Crying. He's huge, like he's like 400 pounds. Like,
all these little tiny skinny girls behind
far
him.
More. It's a beauty contest, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he looks like a minotaur. Or
I
something.
Just want to say, like he's a guy. So
right, he's a man or a teenager. Is he a teenager or is he a?
Yeah, they all look like maybe. Right.
But clearly,
teens.
The every other woman on the stage, every woman on the stage is pretty.
Is a woman
and a woman, and he's like,
no, it's really, it's not even like I guess heretofore, to one degree or another, people have tried to look like the gender they're trying to assume, sort of. Not really. Like, it's getting worse and worse. Like, our...
Yeah.
Our...
well, it's like the gross, you know, these guys with, like, stubble and makeup, and it's just really disgusting.
So, I mean, there's varying levels of performance success as people assume, quote, new genders. But this guy is, I mean, I would have thought that he had to get thin, at least. Not to be, you know, I don't want to be canceled by the...
Isn't that part of the thing that this guy, Gordon McIntyre, which we talked about
ad nauseum
the last three podcasts, I think. But isn't that part of his thing? Is that it's
the humiliation is part of the deal? The point. Like, the whole point of it is that a man like this would do nothing to change his appearance,
right,
except for put on lipstick and a
so
dress.
That you because of the power being exerted, and you can see it in the faces of these girls in the stage. Because of the power being exerted, you have to clap and squeal and be super excited about it. I mean, that's like
They were screaming like it was, you know, like a Miss
America. It was really, it was.
I mean, it's grotesque.
It is grotesque. I mean, so I guess like part of the power play is to use a nursery tale. It's the king who has no clothes, but he knows he has no clothes. But here are his subjects, so you have to pretend he does in order not to be punished. Is that kind of the...
I think so. Well, so we talked about it before. We brought it up, Clown World, before, and I missed it. I didn't say it right. I can't remember what I said before. And then I found another video that I watched. It's that you... whatever is driving this, I'm going to go ahead and probably say that it's Satan, but the more absurd things they can get you to swallow and agree, right, the emperor not having any clothes, the more you become part of the sort of in group, basically. Mm. And you pledge your allegiance to the thing over and over again,
right,
by accepting the ridiculous and admitting that there's a lot of there when there's no there, and you get on board, you're forced to get on board with something that's obviously a lie, and then we're all in this together, and then that's kind of how it works. But the humiliation is the point. That's the humiliation of
why. So what? But why would?
I'm still not explaining very
so
well.
People want to be humiliated.
Well, no, I mean, nobody wants to. That's too strong a term, but people want to be in. They don't want to be cast out.
But they want to be part of the in group, right?
Yeah, you want to make sure that everybody knows that you are part of the regime. Really, it's not a clique. You're on board with the cathedral. The thing that the religion, the things that's being taught, you subscribe, you agree, and so whatever is asked of you, however absurd, and you're going to accept. But the point also is that as things get more and more absurd, then the faithful become more and more intensely faithful.
Mm.
And people who don't, the tepid religious worshiper begins to fall away or be like,
I can go there.
Yeah. Like, aw. So you could see one girl on the stage had her arms crossed and then sort of was like tepidly clapping. And she obviously looked like, meh. And that swimmer, that guy that won the swimming competition, girls,
they objected.
Well, and when they were on the podium next to him, they dressed like the, that funny cartoon thing that South Park.
Oh, right, right.
South Park
right.
had anticipated what would happen. Right. And so they enacted that as a kind of, but so they're not, they were at some point finally like, I'm not going with this anymore. But they show themselves then to be not part of the faithful worshiper. And that's a scary place to be.
Right.
you know, so you've got to, but there's a, it's a way of dividing the religious from the non-religious, the faithful from the unfaithful, the elite from the proletariat, or the,
well, it's, I mean, the communists do that all the time, and they're like, yeah, in the communist regime, this is the party line is this, the five-year plan is a great success, and all the people love being ripped out of their own personal farms and being collectivized, yeah, into collectivized farming. They love that. That's the party line. And if you, and even if every, you know, that's not true, if you don't want to be shot,
you
say it, right?
So, and then we're not like to that point where there's like, it's still quote soft power, but it's humiliating power. Right. Like it's the point is the humiliation. I'm texting the kids for them to get the dog. I thought it was fascinating though. Like I couldn't stop watching the clip because I was surprised by the dress. It's like the sparkly red dress. And I was curious, like, what would go through the mind of a young man who wants to dress up like that and join in something? That's the part that I think is sort of fascinating. So I can understand being on the stage. If I was a teenage girl, I wouldn't probably know what to do. And I don't think I would have had the strength of character back in the 80s or whatever, 90s, to be like, no, I'm out. You know, if I was in that world, I wasn't a person who would dissent from things publicly. I had my own small way of quietly dissenting it.
Yeah, I would just.
But if you were on stage and everybody was clapping, what would you do? You know, that was just a sort of individual question. But I thought it was so funny. I mean, the guy that joins into this.
I mean, I don't know, is it because he's not performing within the male world, and so he has to, like, he's maybe not as.
That's what everybody says, yeah, that it's men who can't make it as men, and so they come in and take over from the women, which is, well, that's sure, but I also think probably there's immense amount of a praise and acclaim given to a young man at the first time when he says, well, I think I'm a girl. And then a lot of attention would be given to him and he would get, you know, yeah, people would help him do that. And then they would continue to
from
congratulate
the very earliest
him
ages,
over
right?
And over right. again until he probably actually really believed himself right. to be the special unicorn on the stage.
I mean, I can understand it like from a younger age, like they're grooming, you know, even younger and younger people, like little girls being told they're little boys just because they like to play with, you know, with gender.
Well, when you go to a kindergarten and they hand you the gender unicorn and you're like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
maybe I'm a boy.
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, you're such an open, I mean, it's such an age where you really need to be not exposed to things that make you question the very essential aspect of who you are.
Right, because right? you wouldn't think about it.
You know,
when you go to kindergarten, you're not like, I wonder what gender I am.
No
you're
one's
like,
thinking that.
What's for lunch? You know.
Yeah.
When do I like my teacher? So this dog is like.
He's whining because no one's come to bring him out. Take him outside.
Maybe somebody is going to come soon. But it's so cruel to the young man. Like, it's actually cruel to him to put him in a dress and parade him around.
Well, I don't know. So my question is whether which category this young man is in. Is he in the category where he was raised from, like, five thinking he was a woman? Or is he a category of a teenager, late teenager, deciding that he wants to try to win some things, and so he dresses like a woman to win this beauty pageant. I mean, and to kind of like, does he actually hate women? Is that part of it? Because I mean, a lot of this is not, I don't know how much, but you do see He's shaking.
He's shaking.
He's literally shaking.
Somebody's literally shaking. He looks like he's about to die. But they did finally get my text. They're just moving. They're
very coming. Slowly.
You can go outside. Go on.
Go outside.
Go outside. Go on. That's right. You can go by yourself. Go on. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Go on. He wants us to go with him. He wants us to both get up and go downstairs with him. Yeah, this is probably a metaphor for something. But you know what it is? It's true, though. Like, all of our lives are completely oriented around our animals. Like, we...
I'm so sad about that.
We just only orient our...
And no, but not only our animals. Also random stray animals that wander into our garage. Yeah. They're also oriented around that.
Yeah. I just believe in kindness to animals. It's like one of the things. It's the only modern thing I can have get on board with. A raccoon
colony living in my garage.
Like, no, but in sort of the dystopia in which we now live, the whole animal thing is the only thing I can, like, full bore. The only thing I can't do, you can't call me a pet mom. Like, I'm not the mother of my cat. Don't do that. We're not the parents of our animals. We're their masters. I know that's really bigoted to say, but I'm... Take the dog with you!
So we're not going to pay $2,000 for, the pet. What was it? We were talking about someone's pet was getting, like, some massive surgery that was probably, like cosmetic or something. It was just ridiculous.
So the animal wouldn't be embarrassed.
Yeah. By something. Like I was saying, though, but I think that doesn't it seem like within the male, within people who are male and identify as gay, that there's a kind of hatred toward women?
Yes.
Because they're competition, right?
I think misogyny is at the heart of this.
That probably that's the case for men who are identifying as women too, because the real women are prettier and and they're actual women. And these men can't be women, no matter how much they
It's just interesting that they would want to be women.
Right. But do you think I'm gonna join the swimming competition and beat them? Or I'm gonna go to this beauty contest, and everybody, if they're going to be woke, has to vote for me.
Yeah, when you look at the expressions on these the people who get into the competition world, there's like a hardness in the eye that, like, say uncle, submit,
right?
I'm going to beat you, and it's horrible, like.
So it literally is the patriarchy.
It's the bad kind, and we've been, like, complaining about the patriarchy. This is literally the kind of patriarchy that people would probably want to get away from if they, if you're watching an authoritarian, mean father forcing his daughters to wear, cover up in yards of denim, maybe that. I think it's totally fine to be upset about the bad patriarchy, but where is it? Like, it's definitely coming in on the left. There's, like, this bad, mean, subjugation of women in various, very public situations. That is surprising to me.
Well, I know it's cliche now, but you either have a good patriarchy, a bad patriarchy. You don't get rid of patriarchy.
Right.
You're going to have it. And so.
And getting rid of the good patriarchy,
incidentally,
is kind of horrible, because what now we have this grotesque clown world patriarchy where a man in a dress is walking up and down in front of tiny little girls behind him. This is like this big guy parading across the stage, and there's all these little girls, clapping. Like, how is that not like The Handmaid's Tale?
Except weirder and more grotesque.
I think it's so interesting and terrible. And as long as you can say that guy is a guy, you should keep saying it, because at some point you're going to be in trouble for saying that guy is a guy. Well, I mean, we've all been in trouble on Twitter for saying that guy is a guy, but.
Well, not anymore.
Not for a little while, but it's shocking. And I really am now a trans exclusionary radical feminist. Like,
you keep saying that you're not a feminist, you're not a radical feminist.
No, I think that women matter. I think I'm but ready to fight that's not for feminism. Women.
What you're talking about is not feminism.
Well, it's the new kind. It that we've had five waves of feminism,
you're not what's your name? What's
no,
your
I'm going to colonize that. I'm colonizing feminism from the right. As a person who's never been a feminist, I'm going to take your word, feminism. I'm going to take it and I'm going to use it against you because you guys are all terrible. It's terrible.
So you're going to be a feminist who believes in complementarianism.
Yeah, men and women are different.
A patriarchal feminist.
Yes, that's what the reactionary. That's what reactionary feminism is now. You believe in, you totally reject the sexual revolution, like you. It's post liberal, like post liberalism. We can't go back, but we sure can change some things now. Like
we can throw down
the bad patriarchy with the good patriarchy.
I mean, it's we were talking in class yesterday about we're still doing Rise and Triumph and Modern Self Run.
How many months are you into it?
Well, this is number 22, class number 22. So, and we're more than halfway through the book. But we're in the section where Carl Truman is beginning to talk about the new left and how critical theorists in the 1920s, melded Freud's just weird, weird sexual theories with Marx. So they both had things that were kind of in common. Freud has this idea that the only way you can be truly happy is to be always sexually fulfilled.
That's so okay. I'm just
and like, that, and that's
guys.
What,
why do we pick the like worst creeps to be?
Well,
to make
someone in class said. Someone in class said that doesn't that sound like the kind of like if an 18-year-old boy were a
yeah,
we're like constructing a
psychological worldview.
Right, oh, right. Man. It does, except for Freud was an 18-year-old, was not an 18-year-old boy
when
he made
it.
Obviously,
an absolute creep.
Right, right. So, because this person said women wouldn't make up that theory. It's like a theory that women would make up. And Freud would say, "It's just because yes, you're just sublimating your true nature." But anyway, Freud says, you know, that's the only way you could possibly be happy, but. What that means is, unless we want utter chaos in which the strong so dominate the weak that only the very few strong people have that happiness by dominating the weak and being sexually fulfilled while no one else really is, you have to have limitations to your happiness. And that's what society does, is it puts these kind of limitations on all the structures around society are built to rechannel sexual desire, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what his book Civilization and its Discontent, or his essay Civilization and its Discontent, was about. Is about how you everyone's unhappy a little bit because we can't all
be do everything we want to do.
Exactly. But if we, you know, if we could find a way that society could be happy, could do that and be happy, then it'd be great, and not descend into chaos. That'd be wonderful. And you know, of course, now it's interesting to read that.
We're absolutely descended into chaos.
Right. Well, no, it's interesting to read that in the porn world, right? Like, because everybody now you have people you are people who are doing that like every day, and they're not happy right now. It has not become the Shangri-La of
human existence. More unhappy than ever.
Right. So clearly it's wrong, but the idea that of trying to find a way for your sexual self to be liberated from the structures of society without also creating a society that's chaotic and brutal. That's so that idea, anyways, of a repression was wedded to, of course, Marx's idea of the proletariat being held down by the bourgeois and needing to, you know, realize, become awake and aware of their true economic condition and overturning the bourgeois, and seizing the means of production. But see, Marxists were worried about, am I nerding out a little bit here?
It's fine. So,
okay. Marxists were nerding out a little bit. No, I'm sorry. Marxists were, freaking out because, you know, capitalism continued to produce things like the Great Depression, and yet the majority of workers still continued to be traditionalists. They didn't want the Marxist revolution. They couldn't figure out why not. Why wouldn't they want to overthrow the patriarchy? Why does you know, Bob working at the factory still go to church and support the structures that support his own oppression? They couldn't figure that out. So they thought maybe what needs to happen is we expand the revolution from economics to
literally everything.
Right. right. So the critical theorists, you know, Frankfurt School, that kind of stuff. I know most, a lot of you guys know this, but the idea is you identify the power binary in every kind of institution and system. And then you help the people on the below, underneath the thing, recognize that the structures that are keeping them bound are only benefiting the powerful. And then you, as an elite intellectual, help destabilize those structures by creating new narratives within them. So like Jesus and John Wayne, I know we have to keep that reference going. That was like 20. Jesus and John Wayne is a great example of destabilizing a narrative, right? It's a perfect critical theory application of a topic. So that's where Freud and Marx come together, because now the sexual self becomes in need of liberation, in need of revolution. You need to be able to overthrow those limitations that have kept you from sexual happiness. And voila. From, is that how the French say it?
Yeah, that's it.
So right, you can draw the line from the people who started wedding Marx and Freud to what we're looking at now with a very large behemoth man being made the beauty queen of some county.
I mean, it's...
He's liberated, right? That's liberation. That's the revolution. And so, of course, you have to toe the party line and clap, right?
All of the young ladies, liberation, of course, doesn't matter quite so much. Just like, you know, they don't get to be liberated in this situation unless they decide to change, you know, get on board with the regime.
Well, they need to let go of this notion of a binary sex.
And then they can be part of the thing that matters, the new religion.
Right.
It's ironic and sort of fascinating, though, that it's under the guise of, you know, liberation, quote. So you're like watching people being enslaved.
Yeah.
A horrible way of life, to
people being mutilated, or their bodies being mutilated, their hormones being
things that would actually inhibited. Make them happy.
Yeah.
I was just like, one thing that makes me sad right now is how, I mean, the level of like this world is making people really ill in their minds and unable to deal, and to just taking out all of the structural supports that make people be okay. So it's just funny that, you know, what really actually drives people is a fear of death. But that's one thing that creates syphilis. It's not like a more great desire, like a constant desire to have sex with people. It's the looming terror of death is what has characterized human anxiety and makes, you know, people, but religious, taking that away, like removing a proper fear of death, makes people really mentally ill.
Well, I think I wouldn't say you're removing it because one thing that marks a Christian view is, of course, and most religious views, is that death is not the end. And so you can forego various pleasures that are offered to you on earth in order to have an eternal joy, right? But if you take away the eternal joy, there's nothing after this, but nothing, then you only have now. And so then if you only have now, someone prohibiting you from having the joy that you want is, they're literally stepping on your, well, they're keeping you from being saved. They're keeping you from experiencing a kind of salvation, which is what, which is how liberation is spoken of. If I can't dress like a woman and be a woman and win this pageant, then you have destroyed me.
You're sending me to hell.
You're sending me to hell. Right. Cause there is nothing after this. I have to have the full expression of joy right now, or I will not have it.
I guess that's what I mean. It's not the fear of death, but like death as a thing has been taken away. And,
death as a thing. What do you
mean? Like, the contemplation of death has been removed.
Okay, and right. So if you see this fear as the only avenue for joy, right, you're not going to want to think about death.
You can't think about it. There's no category for it. You've removed it as a category of human knowledge. Right. And so you can't either look forward to it or fear it. You just, it's not there. And you have to concentrate all the time on things that are happening right now, and then you know, shape everything to your present feeling, which is so cruel. I mean, that is the most cruel and terrible thing that you can do to a human, is like force them to be in the moment all the time. I visited because of having to, I read about mindfulness and all that stuff when I was reading about manifesting. And I, Eckhart Tolle, Oprah's favorite person, Eckhart Tolle, was like, be mindful. You constantly bring your thoughts back to the moment over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Well, the one way you can just dismantle that idea in your mind is to think, well, almost all the moments that you might experience in a given day are terrible, and you don't want to be being brought back to them incessantly. Like, so you're lying in a hospital bed because you've just had cancer surgery. You don't want to live in the moment.
Right.
Like the moment, that particular moment is terrible. It's terrible. And then extrapolate that for like many, many moments. All those girls on the stage behind this man, you want to live in the moment, that you want that moment to characterize your entire life. That's humiliating and despair. That's dystopia. No, you live for another moment. You live for a further moment. You live for something beyond yourself. But no, you're constantly drawn back into you, into who you are, into your biological wretchedness again and again and again and again. It's
hell.
It's hell. It's hell. And you can see it in people's faces. You can see the despair and the ruin driving down streets in our town, looking at people's faces, the way that young people dress and look. I'm not trying to be like nostalgic about the past. I hated how people dressed in the 80s, but it's a despair that's like fallen suddenly over the consciousness of our whole society.
Yeah. I think even if not everyone has bought into it, well, I don't know. I think if you took a poll, you'd probably get the majority of the people of this country saying they're in favor of the trans stuff, and because they have to, right? It's gotten to the part.
It's self-protective,
right?
Many girls in school say that they're trans, or they say my pronouns are they them,
right?
And make no effort to do anything about that because they get a free.
They have to say it.
Well, they get freedom from being bullied.
Hmm.
If you say I'm non-binary,
right,
then people by cultural law have to leave you alone.
Right.
And you get some emotional space. I think it's a rational thing to do. If you were in public school, say you were they, them.
Well, don't do it, but
I can see why it's bullied.
But what I was about to say is I think the overarching view of life, I think, has been internalized by a lot of people, that this life is for me to get the most out of. The carpe diem thing of the Dead Poet Society has been like, is now the operating way
people principle.
It was interesting. The election last week, one of the more terrible things I saw was in Montana. There was a proposition to prevent abortion clinics from basically killing babies once they're born, And this is in Montana. Like, when I think of Montana, I think of like cowboy, conservative. So yeah. But the proposition went down by like 10%, 56 to 46, something like that.
Wow.
Which is amazing. I mean, what does that say? Well, I think that says that, that at least in that region, and I don't think it's unique, but the majority of the people there are willing to murder a baby outside the womb, not just inside the womb, which is bad enough. I mean, it's murder either way, but to have a baby lying there suffering and dying so that, you know, Jen can go to college or, you know, the pimp can keep his prostitute making money this is the life of the mother has nothing to do with this.
Right. The mother is alive.
Yeah. This has to do with
the baby was alive also.
This pure, what about me?
Yeah.
I'm going to sacrifice this child so that I can live my best life now.
I mean, but what constitutes a best life is also so horribly and terribly narrowed, because your best life now includes not being able to function as a human being, not having any relationships with anybody that matter, not having a religious view that actually gives you life, and not being told that it doesn't matter, your health doesn't matter, your physical appearance doesn't matter, you just need to keep buying stuff from Amazon. Just keep clicking. Click, 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 click. Get more stuff. Watch more stuff on your phone. Don't you dare put your phone down. Like, the marriage of technology and consumer Amazon industrial complex with the human soul is so wicked. I mean, and it is. It's absolutely patriarchal. It's like all these men who own these companies that don't ever want you to put your thing down. Nobody cares about a woman. It's driven by, it's satanic. It's so satanic. So yeah. And dystopian. I saw this thread a while ago. Like, if you were waiting for dystopia, look around you, look at it. It's actually here. It's not coming later. There you are.
We should talk about something more cheerful. And the only way this is going to turn around is if God has mercy on our nation. I don't think.
Well, on the human race. It's not even about, like, people keep saying our nation. Like, there's no national consciousness. There's no nation, really. There's this sprawling technocracy that is suppressing people and making them mentally ill. That's not a nation. And I don't want to get into the Christian nationalism thing, but your local church is where the kingdom of God is.
Yeah, so I mean, that's right. I mean,
just focus, double down on your local church. Get to know people in real life. And I think the church is going to need to figure out how to take care of people whose physical forms have been destroyed.
Right.
Their biology has been wrecked, and they need, and their mental health. Like, I would say the church is not really equipped to deal with the level of mental health issues that are coming like a tide in an inexorable tide. So happy Thanksgiving.
We should talk about Thanksgiving. Maybe we should, as a palate cleanser, we should take.
Yeah, and next week we'll only talk about food. How about?
Yeah, for the pre-Thanksgiving.
Pre-Thanksgiving. Say that up front. We won't forget. We probably will forget, but.
You know, it is interesting, like, to think about. Okay, I was going to say something cheerful, but then I stopped myself.
Yeah, you don't want to get too far into it.
Because it's interesting how, of the holidays that we have, the one that's eclipsed increasingly is Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Like, so you go from Halloween straight up to Christmas, right? Once Halloween's over, then Christmas time is here.
You go from, like, Satan. Halloween has never bothered me, but it does feel like this year in our neighborhood, the the Halloween decorations were particularly gruesome and just horrible. It's like you go from Satan to Santa, which right. are like the right. same person if you spell them differently.
Right.
And well, you skip the
thing, which is interesting. I mean, because, okay, yes, Christmas is explicitly a Christian holiday, although I don't think a lot of people realize it.
Nobody has any idea.
So what's saving Christmas from being obscured is all the presents and the Santa and the secular stuff. That's the only reason Christmas hasn't really been canceled, is because it's also a time when our greed is satisfied and there's a fat man in a red suit that comes and brings his presents.
Or a red dress.
Or a red dress. Whatever. Yeah, whatever. Santica. He's going to change. She's going to change her name. Whatever. But Thanksgiving, which is explicitly Christian, but doesn't come with the presents, right? You can't get stuff out of Thanksgiving. It's actually you give thanks to God. No. That's the implicit thing. You give thanks to God.
You can't do that.
So, of course, we don't have the Thanksgiving decorations going up in Walmart or whatever, Thanksgiving is like just completely obscured. Of course, people think about the food and that, that's why you don't have the thing. I remember when I was a kid in stores, you would see Thanksgiving decorations going up, like after Halloween, it'd be Thanksgiving time. And there'd be like cornucopias of fruit in places, and the decorative gourds.
You had to learn how to spell cornucopia in Thanksgiving season, and then you had to make one out of paper mache.
And the tracing of the finger turkeys. Right.
I feel like we're getting really nostalgic here. Like the '80s was like
the goal. It was the best time. It was really nice, and that should.
We can't just go back to the '80s.
I know, but if whoever is in charge of things right now,
either
would put Generation X in charge of things.
I know. Yeah, that's true.
Things would probably be a lot better.
People have skipped us. I'm super resentful about that.
I know. Did you see a video I sent you yet? Did you watch a video about this? It has foul language in it, so I don't think we can link it, but it's this person not a Gen X person talking about how strange Gen X people are, because we were like raised by boomers. So we were raised like, he said feral. because we could like go outside
whenever we want
in the morning and not come back until like dark.
Yeah, I used to ride my bike all over Africa alone in the wilderness of Africa. Exactly. And we have to be like, my parents would be like, don't get bitten by a snake.
we were apparently the last generation that was raised like that. And then, we were also at the cusp of the technological revolution, so we also are pretty technologically savvy.
Sort of.
And we weren't, like most of us, some of us were, if you were in the tail end of the Xers, this wasn't you, but if you were before, it was you. There wasn't, getting therapy wasn't a thing. So, like, if your kid was just kind of crazy or hyperactive or whatever, that's fine. You just deal with them. So this person was saying, all the Xers I know, they're either ex-military or they've been in prison or they're in some institution. As if the military is like a prison, but anyway. So I'm telling you about a video we can't link because it's got bad foul language, but
I mean, probably people could just like, look guy. I don't know what his name.
But he's like fascinated by this strange type of person.
It's just called a human.
Right, right.
I mean, right. I do think, the neglect, the emotional, it wasn't that Gen Xers were allowed to go feral and play wherever they wanted. It's that their parents were emotionally neglectful of them. And you can see the ramifications of that in the next generation, where their parents are not enough emotionally neglectful. Like, there's definitely a sweet spot that neither generation got to experience. I don't think
my parents were emotionally
No, but I mean, overall. The latchkey kid, the parents who were like, you know what? I'm going to be, if I'm not happy, you're not happy. So we're getting divorced.
But that was boomer. Okay. Boomer.
That's what I'm saying. That produced the early Gen Xers.
Yeah. Go and out. Like,
and then take your young
BMX bike and go
or old
play in the millennial construction site.
Yeah. Right? Because mommy has to get a divorce now because she's not happy. Right. And so that meme really took hold. Right. I have to be happy. That was a boomer.
Yeah.
mantra, and the Gen X generation suffered emotionally from it. And they produced the millennials who were like, you know, also obnoxious. And now we have Zoomers, which are even worse. It's like the combination of every bad trait from the last 100 years.
Our children are Zoomers, aren't they? Or half of them are?
They're all Zoomers. Okay. They're all Zoomers. Yeah. And they're all...
They're all terrible.
They're all terrible.
No, I like. I don't think that. I don't think Zoomers are so bad, actually.
Well, our Zoomers are great. Yeah, but we should have our Galatian reading because.
Oh, right. Where is the Galatian? Let me find it.
We've been at this for a while, and I feel like
All right.
We probably.
Yes. Here we are. I forgot where we were. Where?
I mean, does it really matter where?
Oh, good. I dog-eared the page, so.
Oh, good. That's so wicked. You shouldn't ever do that.
Yeah. All right. So this is chapter 2 of Galatians. This is like where, I think it's where, yep, it's where Peter and Paul get into a fight. So let's just see what happens.
With the Passion Bible.
Right, right. 14 years later, I returned to Jerusalem, this time with Barnabas and Titus, my co-workers. God had given me a clear revelation to go and confer with the other apostles concerning the message of grace I was preaching to the non-Jewish people. I spoke privately with those who were viewed as senior leaders of the church, and I shared them.
What do you mean they were viewed as?
Yeah. Well, that is kind of what Paul says, but I wouldn't say it's that skeptical. Okay. And I shared with them the revelation of the gospel that I had been preaching so that they would all have an understanding of what I've been teaching. I wanted to make certain that my labor and ministry for the Messiah had not been based on a false understanding of the gospel. My hope was that they would agree with my grace message, and indeed they did agree, affirming the truth of what I had been teaching. They even accepted Titus without demanding that he follow strict Jewish customs, like circumcision.
That's not like strict. That's like the main Jewish custom. It's not like strict.
I think they're saying, I mean, isn't the word, isn't they actually talking about circumcision anyway, before they would receive him as a brother, since he was a Syrian and not a Jew. I met them privately and confidentially, because false brothers is in scare quotes. That's interesting. I met them privately and confidentially,
like,
because false brothers, brother. Wink wink, have been secretly smuggled into the church meetings. They were sent to spy on the wonderful liberty and freedom that we have in Jesus, the Anointed One, and see if we were faithfully keeping the Jewish regulations. Their agenda was to bring us back into the legalistic bondage of religion. Now, wait, no. No.
Religion?
Yeah.
That seems
okay, like this is very Pentecostal here, because it's interesting that, like, a lot of, like, in some charismatic people in Pentecostal religion is not what they're doing.
Right.
It's what you're doing.
What do they have, magic?
I don't know what
that means.
People
be like, we have religion, you have magic.
Relationship.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not religion.
We have religion, you have magic. Right, right. We have religion, they have relationship.
Right, right.
No magic anywhere.
Right. But you must know that we did not submit to their religious shackles, not even for a moment, so we might keep the gospel of grace unadulterated for you. Even the most honored and esteemed among the brothers were not able to add anything to my message. Who they are before men makes no difference to me, for God is not impressed by reputations of men. So they concluded that I was entrusted with taking the gospel to the non-Jewish people, just as Peter was entrusted with taking it to the Jews. For the same God who anointed Peter to be an apostle.
What is non-Jewish, the Gentile?
I think it's, because no one can understand what Gentile means. So the Holy Spirit's helping us by translating
the word Gentile.
Yeah. Okay, so when they all recognized this grace operating my ministry, James, Peter, and John, the esteemed followers of Jesus, extended to me the warmth of Christian fellowship. I'm reading fast to get to the fight. I want to see how that's translated.
Yeah, because I...
And honored my calling to ministry to the Jewish people. They simply requested one thing of me, that I would be devoted to the poor and needy, which was the burden I was carrying already in my heart.
In my heart.
He was carrying a burden in his heart. So when Peter visited Antioch, he began to be misled. He began to mislead the believers and cause them to stumble over his behavior. Now, that's interesting. Peter misled, because it was an act, not a teaching. Okay. So I had to confront him to his face over what he was doing. He enjoyed being with, that's not in the text. He enjoyed being with the non-Jewish believers who didn't keep the Jewish customs, eating his meals with them up until the time the Jewish friends of James arrived from Jerusalem. When he saw them, he withdrew from his non-Jewish friends and separated himself from them, acting like an Orthodox Jew, fearing how it would look to them if he ate with the non-Jewish believers. This is really difficult to follow.
Yeah, it's like very the actual
text without the Holy Spirit translation is actually easier to get. But because of Peter's hypocrisy, many other Jewish believers followed suit, forming a clique and refusing to eat with non-Jewish believers. So even Barnabas was led astray by Peter's poor example and condoned this legalistic, hypocritical behavior! So when I realized they weren't being honest to what they believed and they were acting inconsistently with the revelation of grace, I confronted Peter in front of everyone. You're born a Jew, and yet you've chosen to disregard Jewish regulations and live like an Aramean. Mm-hmm. An Aramean.
That's really odd.
The Greek word is Gentile. That's strange.
They just really don't want to use that word.
I don't know why they don't want to use it. Yeah, I don't know why they want. When they do, why then do you force those who are not Jews to conform to the regulations of Judaism just to make a good impression on your Jewish friends? Though we are Jews by birth and not Jewish sinners, and not non-Jewish sinners, we know full well that we don't receive God's perfect righteousness as a reward for keeping the law, but by the faith of Jesus the Messiah. Interesting. Okay, we'll have to pick up later. But so again, if you don't know this passion, if you have a Bible at home, you should probably just throw it away because that Bible was not translated by the Holy Spirit through.
What was his name?
Dr. Brian Simmons. So the Bible you have is clearly inferior. So throw that away and go buy the Passion Translation, which will tell you what the Bible really says.
Oh my gosh. No, don't do that. What is the ESV? I forgot, like the
English Standard Version.
No, I know, but what was it called? What did Lee Gatus call it? Instead of ESV, he called it something else, like I can't remember, so that wasn't a good joke. Oh well. Whoops. Thank you for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.